Well, hello, you're listening to Funeral 614, where we explain the fun in funerals, factual, useful, and noteworthy information. I am your host, Lori Diaz, the funeral chick. I am very excited about today's episode. I shared in our very first podcast that in February, we would talk about loving our loved ones. One of the ways we can love our loved one is to make a decision whether or not for our loved ones to be a donor. So on February 14th, 2020 is National Organ Donor Day. And in honor of the hundreds of thousands of patients currently waiting for an organ, we are doing this podcast to get the word out about the importance that a donation can make. I want to share some stats about donation. These stats are from July 2019, and it states that over 113,000 candidates for a transplant are on the U.S. waiting list. It also says that one deceased organ donor can donate up to 8 life-saving organs. I found that to be just a powerful statement in itself. So heart, 2 lungs, liver, pancreas, kidneys, intestines, those are all life-saving organs that you can donate. I found that to be another statistic that I don't think people really know what you can donate. 2 out of every 3 people on the waiting list are over the age of 50. Over 67,000 people, which equates to 59%, on the list are ethnic minorities. Someone is added to the list every 12 minutes. So organ donation is very complex and intertwined with medical, religious, legal, cultural, and ethical issues. It can also be very controversial. Some see the good, but some do not support based on what they've heard. I'm interested in hearing today's story. Yet on average, 20 people on the United Network of Organ Sharing, which is UNO's waitlist, die every day because there's so few organs available. So today's episode, I'm joined by a couple who is very active in volunteering at Lifeline Ohio. He is a recipient of a kidney donation, and I have often seen them in the community speaking about organ donation and educating the public and dispelling myths about the process. She used to be one of the trainers who worked for the government when I was there and remembers when I shared in class that I wanted to be a funeral director before this dream even was realized. Professionally, I have had the honor of serving their family at the funeral home. They have both been very supportive of Affinity Memorial Chapel. Personally, they are a couple that I love, and I'm excited to welcome Stan and India Harris to Funeral 614. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show. I was at home thinking what I wanted to do for National Organ Donor Day. And I remember talking to Stan about being a recipient. I thought about his story and the fact that you all are so active with volunteering that I thought it would be perfect for a podcast. And so I'm thankful that you all had us over to your home so that you could share the story. So I don't know all the parts of the story, but I think we're going to try to put it together. So how did you connect with Lifeline? And for our listeners, tell us what Lifeline is.
Lifeline of Ohio is the organ donor organization for the state of Ohio, where we volunteer. They work with families, living deceased donor families. When they see that someone is an organ donor, they are called in to work with that family, and they are the ones that will set you up and let you know.
What they do is they communicate with the hospitals and the funeral homes. It's a team effort.
Right.
As far as when someone passes away, they go to the, they help register that, they help work with that person through the registry.
Right.
Work through the family.
Right. And so how long have you all been volunteers at Lifeline?
We've been active volunteers since he got his kidney in 2012.
How did you get introduced to Lifeline?
Stan's family has a history of kidney disease in their family. And his mom was on dialysis. And his aunt that recently passed away, she was on dialysis. So we went to a program called Heroes.
Heroes Tribute.
And it was a tribute to organ donors.
Okay.
who had said yes to organ donation. And during the program, it was a program that matched Lifeline of Ohio with the spiritual community.
Okay.
And they had this program, and during the program, they asked for those who were waiting to stand. And his mother's sister, our aunt, she stood. We had no idea that she was on the donor list. And at the time, we never thought our life would be impacted by organ donation. But we were organ donors because his mom was on dialysis, so we knew the importance of being an organ donor. So we were already donors. We had already said yes to it on our driver's license. And that was 2007, maybe. Mm-hmm. And little did we know that a year later, that would be us.
Wow. So when you talk about history of kidney disease in the family, was that something that the family knew or family talked about, or was it something that the family didn't really kind of discuss?
It never really was discussed. It just, because not only was my aunt, I had two aunts, an uncle, a cousin, and my mom were all had kidney failure.
Wow.
But we never really talked about it.
Wow. Okay. I think I one of the statistics that I was looking at said, I think that kidney donors is the highest.
See that more than any of the others.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So what kind of led to the connection? I know we said that we connected with Lifeline, but did Stan start having symptoms to kind of say, hey, something's going on? Was mom still going to dialysis? We're trying to paint the story. Tell the story.
Well, unfortunately, my mother passed in 2006, and my illness came in 2008. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure and diabetes around 2006.
Okay.
So that's what led to my eventually kidney failure.
Okay.
Not totally responding to my health needs. But then tonight she's talking about when we went to the Heroes Tribute, when my aunt stood, that kind of drew at us the importance of donation then, because even with my mom, we never talked, because she had so many illnesses that donation wasn't part of her.
Right. But having your aunt stand, it kind of made it.
It made it very personal.
We have a person
yes.
who's in need.
Right. It brought it home.
I think one time I was driving, and I think I saw on the back of the car someone had said, please call, trying to find a donor. And I was like, wow, they put it on their car.
And now more people are talking about it. It's, you know, like, that's part of what we do. We go out in the community. We go to health fairs. We go to schools. We go to mostly any event anymore, promoting organ tissue donation.
So when you get diagnosed, is that in the doctor's office, do they connect you to Lifeline? I know we connected with Heroes, but what's the next steps after?
No, basically, that part of it is all personal, because they don't work with doctors.
Okay.
That's a whole different scene. Once you, it's a choice of your own, really. Once you have kidney failure, you go on dialysis. You do have a service social worker, but basically you're on dialysis. You're being treated by your doctor.
And how many days a week were you doing dialysis?
I was doing dialysis 3 days a week, 4 hours a day, and I was still working at the time.
Okay.
My wife told me I didn't have to work, but
right,
it was just me, you know.
Still
motivating
working
myself to get up.
Okay.
But, the Lifeline part, we picked that up on our own, you know, because it's like I said, you can't tie the two together, because it's a private organization.
That, okay.
And what they do, you know, the doctors don't know anything about the transplant system, really.
Okay.
But I knew about from the Heroes Tribune.
We just decided we wanted to do it because
right.
it, like you said, when Alma stood up, it was so personal. And it was like, wow. And we knew that this was a family thing. So we just decided then that we wanted to do it. We were going to volunteer. Then the next year, I get the call. He left home that morning. We both left home that morning. About, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I get the call from our daughter that her dad is at OSU East on life support. And then I go there and I'm told that he had congestive heart failure. His lungs had collapsed and his kidneys were totally gone. And they didn't know if and when he would ever wake up.
And this was I was on my way to work. And really, I really wasn't sick. I keep always emphasizing that the fact that I was not sick.
Wow.
I had some episodes where I had swole up and sweated. And I was on my way to work. I'd had a really busy
and
weekend.
And hid it from me.
I had a really busy weekend. And I'm only on the way to work. I said, you need to make a doctor's appointment. I said, but something's going on. Just stop at the emergency room. And really, I walked in the emergency room.
Wow.
At OSU East. And at the time, they had moved the emergency room on me. So I went to the old one, went to the door, walked to the door strong, walked back to my car, and fell on my car. And I was able to drive around to the front of the hospital and walk through the door.
Walk through the door again?
Walk through the main door.
Wow.
They put me in the wheelchair because the nurse looked in my face and said, this looks like it's serious. And she ran me back to the emergency room. And that's why I was saying earlier, and that's all I remember for the next 2 days.
Wow.
But condition of heart failure, kidney failure, and respiratory failure. But the thing about it is, like I said, that everybody that has a transplant, they don't deal with
Lifeline
of Ohio. You know, that's a choice you make on your own.
But in that moment at the hospital, is that when Lifeline, the transplant didn't happen then?
No.
You kind of, you went
for through. For 4 years, he
okay.
was on dialysis for four and a half years.
So how long from that episode of being at the hospital, how long was he there from going to OSU?
Oh, my God, almost 3, maybe 4 weeks. He was in the hospital total time. He was on life support for almost 48 hours. And from that, we were told he would be on dialysis until he could get a kidney. And the wait was usually 5 to 8 years.
No, I know as a wife, to even be at the hospital and know that your loved one's on life support and horror stories that you hear, just what sustained you during that moment? Was it family? Was it faith or combination of everything?
A combination of the two. I am very much that person who always felt I had to be in control. But when I walked in that room and I saw my husband, I knew I had no control. The doctors told me they had no control. And at that point, I really had to put my faith in action. I had to not just believe and say, I had to just do it. I had to let it be. And I had to let God work that out because I couldn't.
Right. Now, you come out of the hospital and now you're told that you have to go on dialysis. So we're on.
Well, I was on dialysis.
Oh, you're on dialysis.
Day one.
Right. Got it.
So when I come out, I go to a dialysis center where I do get a caseworker. And that's when we started discussing the fact of getting a transplant. They do all the legwork for us, sign you up for a transplant and all that, make sure you're eligible.
Was that something that you, what was that process like of hearing that you might have to have a transplant? Were you hopeful or were you like looking at maybe statistics that you heard or did you think?
I was very hopeful, you know. But at the same time, I was willing to wait it out because, you know, my daughter had, she was going to sign up as a living donor. She has diabetes. She couldn't sign up. My daughter has some slight health problems, so I canceled her out. Then my son was in the military at the time. He had called me, and I had made the decision. Then I had told him, no, I'll just wait.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a waiting process, but I believed the whole time because I just knew that it was going to happen.
Right.
You know?
I think as I was researching to kind of talk with you, I didn't know that there was like two different type of donors and they kind of labeled them maybe a deceased donor and a living donor. It kind of didn't click like, oh, well, wait a minute. People can donate a kidney and they're living. But I think I was looking through the funeral aspect of kind of I'm seeing donation from a different view. So that was interesting to kind of think of it
in that term. Lifeline of Ohio only deals with deceased donors.
Okay. Yeah. And I found that we hope to connect with the young lady from Lifeline so that we can talk with her about that, because I know that there is, we deal with Lifeline. I know how special they are when they come to us and make sure that they have the living memorial, and they're always making sure that the family is covered. I really like how they provide services to the family. So tell me about the phone call that kind of says that you're on the list, and how long did you wait on the list?
Well, as far as being on the list, I was always on the list maybe within a year after I went on dialysis. So I was on the list.
Okay.
But the part of being on the list is anytime you travel, you have to take yourself off the list.
Oh, okay.
So in this 4 years, I ended up getting three calls.
Okay.
The first call came, she was in Dayton working. They called me on some Wednesday night, maybe about midnight. And they said it's possible that they might have a matching kidney. This is like maybe 2010. So I called her and let her know. She was getting ready to get on the road, come right back home. I said, no, let's just wait it out, see what's going on.
Right.
They ended up calling me back 6 o'clock in the morning, let me know that it wasn't going to work out for me.
Okay.
So that was the first time. Second time, we were in Indianapolis.
Okay.
At a football game, though. Where were we at?
Classic.
In the football game, my phone going off. I don't get it. Then her phone starts going off. So I go outside and make the call back. In the meantime, she ain't looked and seen who it was. So I had an infection in my foot. And one thing they tell you is if you have infections, you really don't want to mess with a transplant because, you know, it's,
right,
it could ruin your
chances. Yeah.
Right.
So I had an infection I had just gotten, and my doctor had just looked at it. But so they said, well, Mr. Harris, we have a possible match for you. I said, well, I'm in Indianapolis. They said, well, if you can get here within 3 to 4 hours, we can see if it'll work for you. I said, well, I have an infection, and I don't want to chance that.
Right.
You know, and they try to really talk me into it. And then when I told her what was going on, she looked at me like, really? I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it. The spirit hadn't spoke to me about it, so I just said no.
Right.
So the third time, we went to Georgia. I forgot to take myself. I had took myself off the list. We went to a family reunion. I came back from the family reunion on a Monday. That Wednesday, I went to dialysis. I was asleep. And I woke up. The spirit woke me up and said, call Lifeline. Called Lifeline on a Wednesday. And she had been fussing at me about, you know, I was working. And she's like, you're working too much. You're doing this. You're doing that.
No, you didn't call Lifeline. You called them.
I did. I called Lifeline, put myself back on the list. I had to call and put myself, not Lifeline, but yesterday I called Lifeline. I put myself back on the list that night. I called a recording, but I put myself back on the list that night.
Because
she had been fussing about me overworking and all that. And I always just tell her, I kept telling her, I'm going to get a kidney soon.
The dialysis had stopped working.
Okay.
And you can tell, I could tell. As a wife, I saw it from a different perspective.
So was he more tired or?
More tired. I saw things, his skin, when I would touch it, it felt like leather. And it wasn't right.
You saw signs that
Something's not right. This is not, too much is going on. And the reason I say I saw it from a different perspective, because when he started dialysis, prior to the dialysis, the skin felt hard like leather. But then once the dialysis started and it was cleaning everything that was supposed to be cleaned, you could see the life come back.
Mm-hmm.
But now I was seeing the life gone again.
You're seeing the leather.
I was, and I was feeling
it. Correct that is, the dialysis is still working, but I was doing
maybe too much.
So what's way too much? Working too much or just?
I'd get up in the morning, go to work at 7:30, leave work at 7:30, go to dialysis at 4:30, get home at night about 9 or 10, same routine every day and doing dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I'm doing now, I had stopped catering though, but just living my life, you know.
Just every day I was living
very, very normal life, doing, you know. But to get back to my story, was so that I called that Wednesday night, got myself back on the list. She was complaining. I went to the doctor that Thursday, my regular doctor. She a female, she says. I thought she had called her. She didn't. So my doctor looks at me and says, what are we going to do about this working thing? I said, Doc, I'm going to be all right. I'm getting ready to get a kidney soon. That was Thursday.
That's Thursday.
Friday, we Saturday, we Sunday, we get up, go to church. We come home Sunday night. We land in bed about midnight.
Well, prior to that, we're sitting, and I remember this just like, it was just amazing. We were sitting at Tusing and Bryce, and I felt his, I just reached over, and I looked at him, and I touched him, and I said, you know, you don't have to go back to work when school starts back. You can just go ahead and take disability. God is going to take care of us. Mm-hmm. He looked at me. He said, I went to the doctor Thursday. I thought she had talked to you because of what she said to me. She said those exact words about me not going back to work. He said, but I'm going to get a kidney soon. This is Sunday afternoon, about 2 in the afternoon, 2:30. Mm-hmm. And then
midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning.
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, the call came. And I answered the phone. And it said, this is OSU transplant. And I'm you know, not knowing what to, you know, just like and looking at him and gave him the phone.
No, I took the phone.
He took the phone because I'm just blabbering. Just.
And they told me to be there within the next, when I make the announcement, I could be there within the next 2 hours.
We kept a bag packed all the time for the hospital.
So I went to the hospital and it was a 2-day process. I think that was on Monday morning, about 3 in the morning. Yep. And there was another young man in the room. And when they always called two people.
Oh, okay.
Primary and a secondary. Mm-hmm. I was a secondary.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, now you're getting those like, okay, am I going to be, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and they don't really tell you anything, but they're getting the kidney ready, make sure it's functional for the donation. Mm-hmm. About maybe 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, they called Chucky in. He went and got his, and he was a young man. He's about 4.
No, he went in that morning.
Yeah, okay.
He
yeah.
went in that morning.
And then I went in about 5 o'clock that evening.
And what they tell you is when, like you said, the primary, the secondary. And they let us know he was the secondary. But they treat both people as if they're the primary. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't know whether he would get a kidney until the primary couldn't get it.
Okay.
Or if they had two kidneys
that were functional and viable, then they both. But they told us that was very rare. They usually only get one viable kidney from a deceased donor. Mm-hmm. And so they took the primary down that morning about 10. So we had all day waiting. And then about 4:30, they came up and got him.
Came and started prepping me. Let's go.
Started prepping him for surgery. And that process, we were in the waiting room probably about 4 hours later the surgeon came out, and he said, wow. So everything is going great. He said, very rare, but we had two kidneys that we could transplant today. Mm-hmm. He said, so we'll just keep you informed. And they both got kidneys that day.
Now, were you able to meet the donor family later, or
have not met them to this day?
We've written them
to thank them.
Okay.
And you know, different people respond differently. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And we'll write them again. You know, but you know, there's no pressure on them. I understand.
I know sometimes people do have an opportunity to meet, and then at the same time, remember the family they lost the loved one. So sometimes it's not always you know, sometimes it's hard for them, but sometimes I've seen a story where they were able to kind of connect, and they actually kept the relationship going because they felt like that was their loved one, you know, still being able to have a connection.
And part of the work we do with Lifeline, we get to see all that. We get to see people who meet. We've got to meet people who donated. Mm-hmm. We work with people whose loved ones have donated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of our ambassadorship. You know, we're in, all ambassadors who come from all different walks of donations.
So right.
We deal with all those people. But to get back to the question you asked her earlier, you know, how did she get through it the night, the day that she came to the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Daisy, who you know.
Aunt Daisy.
And my enamel, they both were having a procedure that day.
Wow.
So all of the Tates and all the Bookers were already at the hospital.
Were already there. And that's a huge family in itself.
They're already at the hospital. Because the doctors, when I came in, now I'm coming in on the top of all that. So we're all three of us are at the hospital. So our family.
At
OSU East. They didn't know he was there. He didn't know they were there.
Well, I didn't know nobody was there. So.
Well, yeah. He didn't even know he was there.
So you can picture that scene.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was there. Because they're calling everybody because I'm not going to make it, you know. So everybody's right. At the hospital.
Right.
And when I woke up.
I know how they feel about Uncle Stan, so.
And the nurse was like, who are you? That's how many people were at that hospital. They were asking me who I was.
You know? Wow.
There's a whole lot of people out there.
Now, now, how long are you in the hospital from the transplant? How long does that process take?
6 days.
Yeah, about 6 days, seven days.
I had a real good recovery. I remember the second day. Well, they keep you under observation for 48 hours. So the nurse came down and got the other young man, and she put him in a wheelchair, and she rolled him down to our next room, which was like 8 doors down. So I came back. When she came back to get me, I sat up on the side of the bed, and I'm waiting. She said, well, let's go. I said, where's my wheelchair? She said, you don't need none. The way you jumped up.
She said you didn't need one.
You don't need a wheelchair.
And you know, the part that was so amazing to me, like I told you, his skin felt like leather. When they brought him out of surgery, his skin felt like a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
Just that quick from that surgery and that transplant. It was like life.
Mm-hmm.
His skin was different. The touch, everything was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
What dialysis does, it removes the toxins and poisons from your body.
Right.
So, you know, but they're not getting, what dialysis does in those 4 hours, 12 hours a week, it does what your body does 24 hours a day, every day.
Okay.
So I'm only getting mine done 12 hours a week, 4 hours a day. So you're not gonna be that clean all the time,
right?
And also, when you're on dialysis, one thing you don't do, you don't urinate.
Wow.
So as soon as they plug their kidney in,
you were able to.
Woo!
It's life giving, and that's why I tell people all the time: if you don't know, then I understand you don't know. But when you know, it's life giving.
I get a lot of questions sometimes with families. I think there's like these myths out there of not being able to have a service because they've allowed their loved one to donate, and I don't think that they often know the power and the gift of that donation. And they also don't realize that you can still have very much so a service and a viewing.
Everything is
no one knows.
Mm-hmm. No one knows. And, you know, that part of it, I tell people all the time when I'm asked about it, it is such a bittersweet. If ever you didn't know what bittersweet was, it's bitter because you know that that family has lost someone. But then it's sweet because you still have your family member, but you have this feeling for this other family. And thank you is just not, it's not adequate. You don't have the words. And so we both said, you know, we were going to make sure that he lived his best life and that he show his donor how much he appreciates that life-giving, right. Just that little check the box,
right.
And say, I'll give or I'll be a donor. And when we did that, we had no idea. When we checked the box on the driver's license, like I said, it was because his mom was on dialysis, you know, and he had a history of that in his family.
Right.
But never knowing that it would be us, you know, we just think you see your loved ones and they're older, you know, they have illnesses. And then it was us. And that's when the reality of it was like, wow, this is real. This right. is so real. And it does. It gives life. Right. I've seen it. I tell people I wake up with a miracle every day.
I love that.
And one of the things I did share in my letter to my donor family was the fact that I honor my life. I honor that donor's life with my life. And that's why one of the reasons I do give back.
Now, do you feel like you serve Lifeline more than, because I know we were volunteering before, but do you feel like it's more, you can embody it because now you can actually, sometimes it's easier to be able to be the person who's, I'm telling you what it did for me so that a person can actually see instead of, do you feel like you're more invested a little bit more or?
Oh, totally vested.
And part of being out there in our community is, you know, we are show me people, you know, and that's probably when I talk to people, when people come up to some of those myths, like they're not going to save our lives. And, you know, all the myths in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, well, they didn't know me. When I walked into OSU gas and prayer, them people didn't know me. And I just shared this recently. This reason I shared this with Indian them. I didn't tell them about that. But everyone in that hospital that addressed me, every one of them were white. And I seen the care in their faith, how mm-hmm. important. I was very important to every last one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They were caregivers. And I was important. It was important for them to save my life.
Right.
And that's one of the, you know, big myths is, well, if they know I'm an organ donor, but they don't. Right. They don't know that coming in the door. They didn't know that about him. The doctors don't know. No one knows other than you.
Right.
And he's here. And this was, my husband has a tendency sometimes to believe back then to believe that he was Superman. And so I told my girlfriend while he was laying there on life support, I was like sitting there and I'm watching him and I was like, I need a camera. And this was before cameras were on phone, you know, the phone camera thing it was just coming out by 2008. It wasn't as, and I don't even know where my phone was, but she came in. I said, girl, I need a phone. I need something, a picture, a camera. I said, because he's not going to believe this. When I say he was on life support, he's going, it wasn't that bad.
It uh-huh. wasn't that bad.
She reached in her purse. She had she said, I take my camera everywhere I go. She took his picture. Uh-huh. So that I would have something to show him and say, this is how it was.
Right.
And we take that picture when we go and do volunteer work for Lifeline, and especially in our communities. We take that picture. We show them that picture on life support with him being an organ donor and having that on his driver's license. And then we show him the picture of him walking out of OSU North.
After my transplant.
4.5 years later, after his transplant.
After the transplant.
And then usually when I work with, while I'm out working, the stand, the poster, mm-hmm. and I'm on the poster too. So I say, and that's me right there. Then I say, and this is me.
Right.
So like they see four different versions of me.
Wow.
But get back to the Superman thing. That's just her interpretation of it. My interpretation is I can do all things through Christ who strengthens
right.
me.
So you are Superman. What does the ambassador, what do you do as an ambassador? I know we talked about it in the community, but is it fairs? Is it churches? Where do you go to share about donation?
Wherever they ask us to go. We have been to churches. We go to fairs. We do health fairs. We do... right now, they just recently tapped into us to go to, because most people think, you know, the older you get, the chances of you being an organ donor becomes very limited. But they just selected us to go to senior centers to talk to seniors.
This is a new program.
And this is a new program where you go into nursing home and senior homes and you talk to the seniors about being organ donors. So in the schools, I haven't been to schools, but he's been to the schools. So wherever they tell us, wherever they want us, we went to recently OSU freshmen. When the freshman class came into OSU that day, we went up there and did the story there.
OSU football games.
Football games, anywhere. High school, football games.
Are you not just life, but do they encourage people to, can they sign up there to be an organ donor? Yes. Okay.
We sign them up. As a matter of fact, we did the African-American Male Wellness Walk.
Two years ago. We do it every year.
Well, that was Lifeline's first year doing it. Okay. Because
3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago. Because there's this kind of myth thing that you're not going to get that much response in our community.
Right.
And we made it a myth. I think that day we signed up over 25 people at the Male Wellness Walk, and they were amazed. When we took that back to Lifeline, they were amazed because they had never gotten that response. But when you know how to talk and you know what to say, and they see your story, not just you telling them some stats, there has to be a story. And that's why for us it's so important to do what we do, because if I look like you, and I got a story, and my story is real, you'll receive it more.
And I think that that's why, from the funeral home stance, we also need to share, you very much so can have a viewing. Nothing's changing. And we can still prepare you. You still will look good. I don't think they understand this. So I think sometimes they need to pair up the two to kind of say, you can go out, they see me, and they say, I'm telling you, you really can be a donor, and it's okay, and that your loved one can still, you know.
And you can see that from his cousin has a living donor. So I look at it from the aspect of, if a living donor can give a kidney and they still walk around and you don't see anything about them any different, then it's nothing any different from the deceased donor giving that kidney or giving that whatever it is that they give, because it's not anything that you see, and it's nothing that's going to jump out and say, I'm a donor kind of thing, or, you know, I've done this thing. But to see that,
One of the events we didn't mention was just recently, in the last few years, they started allowing prisoners to be able to donate. And India had the opportunity to go to a prison.
Yes, I did. And that was, I think that day we probably signed up over almost 100 donors in the prison. We went down to, where was it, Orient?
I think it was Orient or London, one of them.
One of the prisons. And it was amazing to see the guys in there talk about, you know, they wanted to do it, but they were never allowed to do it.
Right.
And that day we went, and it was just amazing to see how willing they were to, you know, donate. And I even heard stories from some of them where they had family members who needed organs, and they were willing to donate as living donors, but because they were in prison, they weren't allowed to. So even that is changing.
And our number one responsibility as ambassadors, it's good to get the numbers, but our main thing is educating our community.
Yes.
Right.
Education is more important than, you know, it's just as important as getting the numbers. Because when we go out, we go back, we might only have two or three, but we get a lot of information out.
Right.
And or answer a lot of questions.
I think that was one of the reasons why I started the podcast, because there are some people I might not reach who might not come to the funeral home, but they might be able to listen to the podcast and hear something that tells them something that they needed to know. And I think organ donation is something that people need to think of. I've checked the box, and I think that it's important that, you know, if I can be able to donate for someone, I think that that would be, you know, an awesome gift. And it is the gift of life, because we're seeing Uncle Stan right there now. So I think that that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
How does a person sign up? I know how I did, but tell our listeners how to sign up.
Well, you can always, when you go and get your driver's license renewed, that's one of the things that they will ask you. You can go to the website for Lifeline of Ohio, their website, www.lifelineofohio.org.
Okay.
And Lifeline of Ohio is one word.
And you can when and you go to renew your driver's license, mm-hmm. you can, they ask you, do they still ask? I haven't renewed my driver's license in a while, so.
They ask, year, yes. They still ask if you want to be an organ donor, and you can say yes there, or you, when we go out to fairs, we have the forms that they can fill out.
Okay.
And take it to, it'll go to the DMV, and then online automatically connects you into the DMV registration.
Okay.
Because that's where the registration actually occurs. Even if they do it through Lifeline or go do it through us at one of the fairs, it still ends up going through the DMV registration because that's where all of the donors are found.
And when you go to the DMV, in the slot where the holding the ticket holder, my story is on there. A picture of me and my story is on the ticket holder in the DMV.
Okay. I'm renewing my license this month because my birthday's at the end of this month.
It should be in there.
So I'm going to be looking. I'm going to look for it. At this time, I'm going to take a few moments to speak with Demia Kandai from Lifeline of Ohio.
This is Demia.
Hi, Demia. This is Lori Diaz with Funeral 614. We just finished an awesome interview with Stan and India Harris, and I wanted to touch base with you in reference to Lifeline Ohio. So can you tell me a little bit about Lifeline and what Lifeline of Ohio does?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So Lifeline of Ohio is a nonprofit organization whose purpose is to really empower the community to save and heal lives through organized tissue donation. And so a part of what I do with Lifeline of Ohio is educating the community so that everyone can make an informed decision. It's really important from my perspective because when you look at the statistics, African Americans are 3 times more likely to need a life-saving transplant. But unfortunately, we are sometimes the least likely to register to be organ donors. And so my work in the African-American community is really just dispelling this and making sure that we can make an informed decision that empowers our community to save and heal lives.
How long have you been involved with Lifeline?
This is my 14th year with Lifeline of Ohio.
What do you find to be some of the hurdles with in getting the African-American community involved with donation and kind of understanding the importance?
I think it's just a general lack of knowledge and mistrust of the medical system. And I get that. I get the concept of mistrust when you think about the TB experiment and some other things that have happened. But in addition to that, so you already have that foundation laid of just general mistrust. And then there are so many myths out there. If they see it on my driver's license, they won't fight to save my life. Or the big one, especially for you in the funeral industry, people think that you can't have an open casket funeral if you are a registered donor, and that's not true. You can still be buried. There's no way to tell physically whether or not someone was a donor when you're laying into rest. There's no way at the funeral someone can, just by sight, be able to detect whether or not the person that they're viewing was a donor. But people don't know that, and so that's one of the myths that people have.
That absolutely is one. I shared that earlier when I was speaking with Stan in India, was about the fact that there are families that feel like they cannot have a service, and I explain to them often that there's nothing that impedes you from being able to have a service, and that being a donor doesn't take away that ability.
Right. We always tell people if it was possible to have an open casket funeral at the time of death, it would still be possible after donation.
Now, how do families connect with Lifeline? How do they find out about the services that you do?
Well, they can visit lifelineofohio.org, and all of our services are there. My contact information can be found there. I'm in the communications department. And so a part of what I do is outreach, but we have bereavement services for families of donors, of people whose loved ones died and gave the gift of life. And so we try to support those families. We call them donor families. We have a volunteer coordinator for people who want to become more engaged with the Donate Life community. And so all roads lead to lifelineohio.org just to get whatever resources or information about organ and tissue donation.
Do you all do anything for February 14th on that day, or is there, do you guys do any special, publications or news stories or anything like that in the past? Have you done anything on that day?
Not specifically. I'm not the media specialist. Jessica Peterson is our media specialist. So I'm not sure exactly what we're doing for that day. I do know that we always do a heart story because February 14th is Valentine's Day. So we always try to do stories around our either heart recipients or those that gave the gift of life and were able to give a heart, so some type of tie to the heart. So I guess we are doing something, but we tie it more to Valentine's Day so that the general population can understand it a little better and make that connection.
I love that. And so I was sharing with our listening audience that, Stan and Indy are just a beautiful couple, just a fun, loving. I love to hear them talk to each other because they're just funny and a very sweet family. And so you've been there long enough to kind of actually be able to hear Stan's story kind of up close and personal.
Absolutely. Stan and India are family, not biologically, but all of our Donate Life ambassadors are close to us. As someone who works so closely in the African-American community, I need Stan in India. I need Stan's story in the community. I always tease that Stan is such a draw to any event because everyone knows Stan. If they don't know Stan, they know India.
Right.
And so when you're able to be able to put a face to donation, then it helps people understand it who may not be thinking about it. And so they're invaluable to Lifeline of Ohio and to our community in general. And again, for me, they're family. Those are just big brothers and sisters, a big brother and a big sister that I just love dearly because they care about our community and they care about people.
Right. Now, Demia, what one thing would you want to just share with the listening audience who's thinking about should they be a donor and explain to them how they can sign up if they want to at least consider it?
Well, I think when you understand that the one thing in life that's inevitable is death. And so my philosophy is just, I tell the community, live a long and prosperous and fruitful life and then give. And when that time comes, hopefully not soon, but whenever that time is, that you would make a decision that in your death you would give life, that your legacy would be one of giving. And so when we ask people to make that decision and to register to be an organ and tissue donor, and you can do that, of course you can do that whenever you renew your driver's license, but you can also go to lifelineofohio.org. Again, that's lifelineofohio.org, and you can sign up to be a registered organ and tissue donor. One person in their death has the power to save up to 8 lives and to heal more than 50 lives through organ and tissue donation.
Well, I definitely appreciate you taking our call and answering our questions today and sharing about Lifeline. We really appreciate your time and thank you for coming on Funeral 614, and you have a good night.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. Take care.
Organ donation is often called the ultimate gift of life. You're never too old to register as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. In fact, the oldest organ donor on record was 92 years old. Wow. People who have been sick lately or in the past can still register to be a donor. Medical professionals determine at the time of death what can be donated. Even people who have had cancer or have a current disease such as diabetes or hepatitis can still potentially donate. Donation should not change funeral arrangements. If an open casket funeral was possible before donation, it definitely will be possible after the donation. I'd like to thank Stan and India Harris for sharing their story, and especially thankful for Demia Kandai for coming on the show to talk about the importance of organ and tissue donation. Well, that's our time, and we look forward to our next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate our audience. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Store, or wherever you consume podcasts. If you feel so inclined, leave us a comment. But please be sure to share this episode in your circle of influence. Until the next episode, I'm Lori Diaz, the Funeral Chick. Remember to serve well and have fun. Make it a great day.